Chapter 53. With the Orbital Defense Headquarters burning like a second sun as it plummeted across Coruscant's opalescent sky, the tapered spires and delicate towers of the Imperial Palace were bathed in scintillating orange light. As they descended toward the Chief of State's private landing pad, Leia felt like they were dropping into a forest ablaze. Han brought them down less than a meter behind the tail fins of Phalia's garish Kothless Systems Luxaflyer, and shut down the fusion unit even before the Falcon settled onto its struts. Leaving Anakin's lookalike, his true name was Dab Hantak, aboard under Meewaw's care, they lowered the boarding ramp and found themselves looking down the barrel of a tripod-mounted G-40 portable cannon. "Something wrong with the Falcon's transponder, Garv?" Leia asked, not all that surprised by the cautious reception. "We tried to calm, but couldn't get through."
"Just being careful, Princess."
A thin man in the uniform of a New Republic general stepped into view. "Sorry about the comm problem. The Yuuzhan Vong are starting to take out the satellite web, so Chief of State Phalia has ordered a blackout on all non-military communications."
"That's sure to help the evacuation," Han said.
"Garv," General Thomas, to everyone except his superiors and former superiors, responded with an enigmatic half-nod. Leia had personally named Garv the commander of palace security, and in all the time she had known him, that was as close to a comment on a superior as she had ever seen from him.
"Garv, we ran into a little sabotage problem with Vicky Shesh," Leia explained. "Would it be too much to have someone recharge our containment fluid? And I'd like to speak with Chief of State Phalia."
"We can arrange both."
Garv sent a furry-cheeked Bothan aide off to fetch the maintenance crew, then turned back to Leia, looking uncharacteristically doubtful.
"Forgive me if I'm intruding, but I've heard rumors about Anakin. I can't tell you how sorry I am."
"Thank you,"
Leia said. Knowing she would need to accustom herself to people offering condolences, she laid a hand on Garv's arm.
"That means a great deal to us."
Han nodded.
"We're going to miss him."
"As will the New Republic," Garv said.
"And speaking of the New Republic," Leia said, glad for an excuse to change the subject, "I noticed the data towers are still intact. Shouldn't someone be destroying those records?"
"Someone should be," Garv said. "But Phalia refuses to give the order."
"He thinks he can hold the planet?"
Han asked, disbelieving.
"The idiot. If the Scarheads capture those survey abstracts, there won't be a safe place in the galaxy to put a base."
Garv's expression turned sour.
"I have mentioned as much."
"I'm sure the Chief of State we'll give the order when the time comes," Leia said.
With shafts of turbolaser fire starting to strike at hostile vessels from rooftops all across Coruscant, she felt certain the time had come already. But Garv Thomas was too good an officer to exceed his authority even under these circumstances.
"Still, it wouldn't be improper to arm the charges now, would it, General?"
Garv smiled.
"Not improper at all."
He keyed the order into a data pad and dispatched an officer to see it carried through, then led the way through the hangar to the Chief of State's tower top office suite. After a brief dispute with an agenda droid, which Garv won by virtue of a security override command, the general admitted them to the restricted chambers and withdrew to continue his duties. They found Phalia bereft of his usual gaggle of advisers and sycophants, standing alone in the heart of his opulent office, studying a holographic display of Coruscant's crumbling defenses. The situation was hopeless. What remained of the New Republic fleets were surrounded or cut off from the planet, sometimes both. Half of the defense platforms were falling out of orbit, the rest blinking with critical damage indicators. The atmospheric security force was fighting fiercely in their V-wings and howl runners, but the superiority of their air-dedicated craft could not overcome the enemy's sheer numbers. Yuuzhan Vong dropships were already forming up to make their runs, and Leia knew this battle would soon be moving to the rooftops. It took Felia a minute to notice he had guests.
"Come to gloat, princess."
Leia forced a warm tone. "Not at all, chief." Hoping Han's face would not betray the opinion of Felia he had expressed earlier, she extended her hands and crossed to the Bothan.
"I came to apologize."
Felia's ears flattened.
"Apologize?"
"For not helping with the military," she explained. "I'm afraid I was too consumed with grief."
Felia's attitude changed instantly, and he took her hands between his paws.
"Not at all. I am the one who should apologize, to call upon you at such a time."
"It must have been important, or you wouldn't have intruded."
Confident that Felia was already considering how he might use her to bolster his evaporated support, Leia shifted her gaze to the display and let the comment hang.
"Our position certainly looks tenuous. Can we hold?"
"We must," Felia answered. "If Coruscant falls, so does my government."
"Yeah, wouldn't that be a shame?" Han said. Resisting the urge to stomp on his foot, Leia smiled and pretended not to notice the sarcasm.
"What my husband means to say, Chief Felia, is that you have our support."
She pulled Han to her side.
"Isn't that right, dear?"
"Of course, dear."
Han sounded sincere, or close enough to draw an accepting nod from Felia.
"Chief Felia can count on us."
Leia put on an earnest look.
"If you thought a few words from me would do any good..."
Felia's smile looked more relieved than appreciative.
"What could it hurt? If the military knows you're with me, they'll stand firm behind my government. That's been the problem, you see. All these senators running for home and grabbing a piece of any fleet they can."
"I know," Leia said. "I've seen the news vids. Is the comm center still over by the window?"
"That was such an easy place for Baldavian lip-readers to watch."
Felia took her arm and guided her toward what had been, when she occupied the office, a coat closet.
"One body of open water on the whole planet, and you drop our X-wings in it?"
Mara said, wrapping an air splint around her broken ankle.
"The only one? What were you thinking, Skywalker?"
"Mara, I really didn't have a choice," Luke said.
The heat of his engine fires had fused the fibers on the back of his flight suit, and he would need a close cut before his singed hair looked human again.
"It was put them here or crash them into a tower."
Mara and Luke were staring across the firelit waters of the Western Sea, a vast artificial lake and multi-species recreation area spread across thousands, maybe tens of thousands, of rooftops. A dozen whirlpools marked where crashes less controlled than their own had punctured the durasteel bed and freed the contents to rain down on Coruscant's underlevels. All in all, it had not been a bad place to push the X-wings after they ejected, but the bottom was so strewn with discarded droids and junked airspeeders that locating their cherished R2 unit was proving difficult even for Luke. She pulled the air splint's inflation tab and did not allow herself to wince as it compressed her broken bones, then took an injector out of the ejection med pack and gave herself a shot of Bactinum. Mara would normally have avoided any kind of painkiller, but they would be moving fast over the next few hours, and she did not want her injury slowing her down. The Yuuzhan Vong were starting to bring their big vessels down to suppress the rooftop turbolasers, and she could sense that the Beert had not escaped into hyperspace with Ben. They had to find a way back into orbit, and fast. Luke finally stretched a hand over the water. A distant speck broke the surface and swelled into the shape of a scorched X-wing. A pair of Yuuzhan Vong air skiffs promptly dropped out of the sun to attack, in turn drawing fire from a nearby turbolaser battery. For a few short seconds, the sky above the lake erupted into a gridwork of streaking plasma balls and flashing energy bolts. Then one skiff burst into rubble, and the other pulled up,
vanishing into the sun with a stream of laser shafts, chasing its tail. Mara waved their thanks up to the battery crew, which was so well camouflaged on a nearby rooftop that she had difficulty finding it until she used the Force. Luke brought the X-Wing to shore and lifted a wildly chirping R2-D2 from the astromech socket. Other than heat scarring, the droid looked sound, and the fuss he was making confirmed that his hermetic seals remained intact after both fire and submersion. Something big exploded high above, momentarily outshining the sun and spraying long tongues of white flame across the sky. Mara and Luke watched until the brilliance dimmed enough to reveal individual pieces of debris fluttering planetward. But there was no way to know whether the vessel had been New Republic or Yuuzhan Vong. Suddenly overcome by the desperation of their situation, she looped her arm through Luke's elbow and allowed him to take the weight off her broken ankle.
"Luke, how are we going to do this?"
They had seen from the air that the hover lanes were either jammed with traffic or blocked by debris, and they both knew that even if they did reach a spaceport, any spacecraft worthy of the name would be long gone.
"We'll be lucky to get ourselves off planet, much less rescue Ben."
Luke took her in his arm.
"Trust in the Force, Mara."
"Is that the best you can do?"
Mara asked bitterly.
"Did trusting the Force save Anakin?"
"Perhaps Anakin was meant to save us," Luke said gently. He knelt in front of R2-D2 and used his sleeve cuff to dry the droid's auditory sensors.
"We're not in this alone, Mara. If R2 can get through on a military channel, maybe someone else can help."
"Maybe."
Mara looked away and tried to keep the dark emotions from rising inside her. She did not want to blame Han and Leia for their son's peril, but it had been help that had endangered Ben in the first place.
"Will you hurry, Skywalker?"
"Got it," Luke said. "R2.
The droid whistled in excitement.
"You're sure?"
Luke began to dry R2-D2's speaker grill.
"You found Leia?"
"This is not the end," Leia said. 2 years ago, the Yuuzhan Vong entered our galaxy. They came not as friends and equals, though we would gladly have welcomed them as such, but as thieves and conquerors. They saw a galaxy at peace and mistook the strength of our convictions for frailty of arms, the wisdom of compromise for the timidity of cowards. They attacked without provocation or mercy, slaying billions of our citizens, enslaving entire worlds and sacrificing millions of beings to appease the bloodlust of their imaginary gods. They believed we would be easily defeated, because they believed we would yield without a fight. They were wrong. We have fought at Dubrillion, Ithor, the Black Bantha, Borleas, and Corellia. We have fought them every leg of the way from the outer rim into the core. We have lost untold numbers of loved ones, my own son Anakin, and my husband's dear friend Chewbacca among them, and now we are battling in the skies over Coruscant itself. We are still fighting. Soon, the enemy will be on our rooftops, in our homes, roaming the dark underlayers of our city. To those able to evacuate and to those trapped behind, I say the same thing I would tell my twins. Were I able to reach them behind enemy lines, keep fighting. This is not the end. Twice already, Jedi-led forces have decimated Yuuzhan Vong fleets, and we enter each battle with new weapons and better tactics. We have prevailed against ruthless enemies before, against Palpatine, against Thrawn, against the Syruk. This is a war we know how to win. Keep fighting until you can fight no longer. Then exhaust the enemy chasing you, and turn and fight some more. Keep fighting. I promise you, we will prevail."
The Lady Luck's flight deck fell as silent as a Nogri with a vibra-blade. Lando pretended to adjust the shield power until he knew his eyes would remain dry,
then heard an odd half-growl from the co-pilot's seat. He looked over to find General Batra drying his cheek fur. That woman could talk a hut onto a diet. The Bothan spent the next few seconds looking out the forward viewport, where the Beert's finger-sized profile was rapidly swelling to arm-sized. A smaller lozenge, black and scabrous, was tentacled to its belly, and Vicky Shesh's sleek KDY star yacht hovered nearby. Finally, Batra grunted.
General Calrissian, none of those vessels looks like the Errant Venture.
They're not, Lando said, offering no other explanation. As far as he was concerned, his reactivation had ended with the fall of the Orbital Defense Headquarters. Now Batra and his soldiers were just evacuees hitching a ride. He opened a ship-to-ship channel to his wife.
Where are you?
Tendra demanded. I've been worried sick. Everything's fine. I was, delayed at the ODH. As Lando spoke, he was sending her coordinates on a separate data band. When Booster arrives, ask him to swing by this location. I'm doing a favor for some mutual friends, and it would be good to have a Star Destroyer standing by.
What kind of favor?
It's important. Though the channel was encrypted, Lando hesitated to say more for fear of Peace Brigade slicers. Just tell Booster. I'll see you soon.
You'd better.
Bet on it. Not wishing to alarm Tendra, Lando signed off without telling her he loved her. Batra studied him out of the corner of his eye.
Didn't figure you for a hero, Calrissian.
Me?
Not at all.
Lando flashed his salesman's smile. But I couldn't pass on a chance to demonstrate my droids to a captive audience. Batra snorted, then half-smiled and glanced at the primary display. Even this high in orbit, space was crowded with vehicles. For the most part, the Yuuzhan Vong were too busy with Coruscant's still formidable defenses to molest civilian ships, but a dozen skips patrolled the area around the Beert, chasing off any vessel that came near. Batra tapped a claw on the display.
Wouldn't hurt to bring some escort. We could call the Jedi wing off that Yamask.
And draw attention to ourselves. Lando cocked his brow mischievously, then activated the Lux intercom.
Tighten your crash webbing back there. 11A, is your company ready to go?
Affirmative, General.
I'm not a general. The reactivation was temporary. A general is always a general.
General. Lando rolled his eyes and opened a panel on the arm of his pilot's seat. He pressed a safety-locked button, and a valve in the starboard engine pod began spraying non-sealed Tibana gas into the ion drives. The Lux sprouted a kilometer-long tail of what looked like white flame, but was actually a harmless, fulgurous discharge caused by the ionization of Tibana gas. Lando put the yacht into a corkscrew spin and set an oblique course for the Beert, maintaining enough angle to clear the Star Ferry by a safe margin. The skips scattered, but held their fire. A hit might change the damaged yacht's course and send it careening into the vessels they were guarding.
Compliments, General.
Batra squeezed his eyes shut against the nauseating star spin outside. Haven't seen a Bothan runaway gambit this tight in years. Lando continued on a vector that would miss by half a kilometer. The skips wheeled around behind him, but stayed well back from the Tibana tail. The Beert swelled to the size of a building, and Lando nosed down toward it and decelerated hard. And then there was nothing but Durasteel hull in the forward viewport, and the two ships kissed particle shields hard enough to push the Star Ferry into the Yuuzhan Vong tether ship. Lando swung his stern around and tractored the Luck alongside the Beert. The first two coral skippers arrived, belching plasma balls into the Lux energy shields. Lando shut down the sublight fuel feed and closed the efflux nacelles. Tibana gas billowed out through the cooling vents, becoming trapped under the shields and engulfing the Lux in fused photon flames. The next two skips pulled up without firing, and Lando lowered the shields on the Beert's side of the yacht.
11A, go.
When General Calrissian's attack authorization came, YVH-11A was already magna-clamped to the Beert, affixing a bead of elastic detonite to the hull. Still troubled by his failure at the Coruscant proving trial, he had dedicated a processing band to weapon circuitry tests. All systems checked full power and ammunition, but so they had on Coruscant. YVH-11A's self-preservation routines kept accessing the memory of his blaster bolts dancing off the armored Yuuzhan Vong, kept reporting an undetected flaw in his power selection module. His logic center knew the assertion to be groundless. But if it was only a ghost loop, why did it persist even after he degaussed his circuits? In 1.2 seconds after General Calrissian issued the go order, two subordinate units secured the Lady Luck's cofferdam around him. YVH-11A withdrew to the airlock and activated the detonite. A door-sized section of hull popped free and clanged off 11A's chest armor as the pressures equalized. Scanning ahead with both optical and acoustic sensors, 11A rushed through the breach into a small power relay control station. Three crew members lay on the floor, holding their ears, groaning from the pressure shift. YVH-11A ignored them and crossed the cabin, then stopped when his see-through sensors detected a squad of Yuuzhan Vong in the main corridor outside.
Ambush?
124A asked.
Affirmative.
YVH-11A projected red dots onto the wall to show the location of each individual. He was about to outline an attack strategy when 124A clunked through the hatch and started firing. The results left no doubt that his weapon systems were functional.
Corridor secure, 124A reported.
Maximum efficiency, 11A complimented.
Circuits chilling at his own hesitation, 11A assigned firing teams to sever the enemy tether, to secure the Beert's drive units, and to begin a Yuuzhan Vong search and destroy sweep. The most important task he reserved for himself, leaving two squads to secure the breach until General Calrissian arrived with the biotics. 11A set his auditory sensors to their most sensitive and stepped through the hatch. Though only 4.5 seconds had passed, the corridor walls were pocked with spent thud bugs, the floor strewn with Yuuzhan Vong bodies. Droid squads were advancing in both directions, their blaster arms filling the passage with flashes of color. As his processing unit began to interpret auditory data, 11A realized he had underestimated the difficulty of his own mission. Within current sensor range alone, he detected 52 vocalizing infants. Loudly vocalizing infants. Starting with the nearest, 11A stepped over a still-smoking Yuuzhan Vong corpse and followed the wailing through a short maze of corridors to the first-class berthings. An enemy search party was pulling refugees out of their sleeping cabins, shoving them to the floor. The leader was dangling a crying infant by one leg, shaking it at a sobbing human female, and demanding, "Tell me, is this the Jedi baby?"
YVH-11A raised his blaster arm, and the whir of his servo motors caused the Yuuzhan Vong to whirl around. Some pushed their captives back into the cabins. Others dragged them out to use as shields. YVH-11A sprang forward, firing. There was no question of faulty selection modules or dampened power outputs. He dropped five foes in five shots. When the leader attempted to dash the baby against the wall, he even felt confident enough to shoot the warrior's hand off at the wrist. The astonished mother caught the child in her arms, then turned to 11A, babbling incomprehensible words of gratitude.
"Remain calm," 11A replied. "Seek shelter immediately."
Vicky Shesh looked like something resurrected by a Krath death witch. Her cheeks were hollow, her pupils dilated. Her skin as gray as a nogri's, and her gait suggested the influence of some powerful painkiller. But she held her head high and seemed most determined to impress the Yuuzhan Vong following her down the corridor.
Fearful that the glow of his photoreceptors would betray his presence, C-3PO stepped to one side of the evacuation bay hatch and continued to peer through the viewport at an oblique angle.
"And then the nasty Senator Shesh came looking for Ben Skywalker," he said quietly.
In a futile attempt to calm the distressed infant, he was using his agile Tran Lang 3 vocabulator to replicate Mara's breathy voice. The imitation was flawless, but there was nothing he could do about the coldness of his metallic flesh, or about what the child sensed through the Force.
So brave Ben grew very quiet.
Ben whimpered loudly. Out in the corridor, Vicky Shesh cocked her head to one side.
"I told Mistress Leia I was the wrong droid for this," C-3PO whined in Mara's voice.
He opened the emergency med pack he had taken from the escape pod and removed the safe trank.
"Please be quiet, Master Ben. I am quite certain your mother wouldn't want me administering sedatives."
Vicky Shesh spoke to her escorts, and they began to open hatches and search escape bays. C-3PO had primed their own pod for launch, but he was not eager to take another escape pod ride. Besides, they would only find themselves back on Coruscant. The searchers were three hatches away when a hulking YVH war droid appeared behind them.
"Thank the Maker," C-3PO said.
He thought it was a 1-1 series, but that hardly mattered. The whole YVH line was top quality, and the mere fact that there was one aboard was a positive sign. C-3PO sent a burst transmission identifying himself and his charge and requesting aid. He received a terse reply informing him that rescuing him and Ben was the mission. Then the droid loosed a flurry of mini-cannon fire, taking out four of Shesh's escorts in half as many seconds. Ben erupted into a fit of wailing. Given the roar in the corridor, C-3PO thought that 3 centimeters of durasteel wall might prevent the baby from being heard. He was disabused of that notion when he peered through the viewport and found Vicky Shesh crouching behind a bulkhead opposite him, staring through the viewport directly at him.
"Ben, now look what you've done."
It was just the sort of tactical problem suited to a deceptive Bothan mind. One narrow doorway defended by a dozen well-armed foes in possession of an undetermined number of hostages. Batra would normally have sent a team through an air duct, or tried to lure the enemy out by feigning withdrawal. This time, he turned to a YVH war droid and pointed at the door.
132, secure the bridge.
Yes, General.
YVH-132A waded forward into a bug swarm so thick Batra lost sight of him. The droid countered with a lightning storm of blaster fire. 3 seconds later, he stood in the doorway, both blaster arms smoking, laminanium armor pitted to the circuit casing.
"Bridge secure, General."
"Well done."
Batra raised his comlink and spoke to a subordinate waiting in Lando's yacht. "You may send the Lady Luck on her way, Captain. And give it some speed. I'm sure General Calrissian would appreciate the vessel still being intact when he activates his recall unit." The general clicked off without awaiting an acknowledgement, then followed a dozen soldiers onto the bridge. Though there were no signs that the Beert's crew had put up a fight. 2 had been tortured to death, the rest bloodied to various degrees. Batra looked around until he found a Rodian with a captain's epaulette hanging off one shoulder.
"This ship is being commandeered."
Batra handed him a piece of flimsoplast with a set of coordinates.
"Take us here."
"You're not commandeering us, General. You're rescuing us."
The Rodian studied the flimsoplast, then looked out the viewport as the uncrewed Lady Luck streaked past with an entire squadron of coral skippers in pursuit. The funnels atop his head twisted outward in confusion. Then he said,
"But I don't understand. This is barely beyond the battle. We won't be safe there."
Batra smiled.
"We will when the Venture arrives."
Lando was halfway down the service ladder when a shock wave slammed the Beert so hard there was no need to finish the descent. He lost his grip and simply found himself squatting on the Starfairy's lowest deck,
listening to the roar of a pitched battle around the corner. "Thermal detonator ignition, General," 11A reported, already standing on the deck. "Tether ship destroyed." "Thanks for the warning." Lando stood, then heard a familiar drone and dropped back to his haunches as a stray razor bug streaked around the corner. The thing dived at his throat, but 11A zinged a low-power bolt past his ear and zapped it out of the air. Lando managed a weak smile, trying not to show his fright, but knowing the war droid had already detected his increased heart rate and the slight rise in skin temperature. He drew his blaster and peered around the corner. Vicky Shesh and 24 Yuuzhan Vong were withdrawing into Escape Bay 14, leaving the floor behind them strewn with tiny black seed pods. Though Lando had never seen this particular weapon, he felt sure the husks contained some unpleasant surprise. "Analysis?" he asked. "Unknown caltrop device," 11A replied. "High potential for biotoxin attack. Thanks for nothing." The Beert lurched slightly as the sublight drives kicked in, and Lando knew they were on their way to the venture. He removed his breath mask from his combat belt. "You're sure it's the right baby this time?" Lando asked. "We're not going after some squib trapped in a locker?" "The sound signature was identical," 11A said defensively, "and the confidence level here is high. YVH-125 received a burst transmission from a 3PO protocol droid claiming to have the correct child." "That's them." Lando covered his face with the breath mask. "Send in a droid, 11A. Lando had barely finished before 125A rushed forward, deftly dancing through husks. He made it two steps, then the pods began to roll toward him. Another two steps, and his foot came down on one. Nothing happened. Then he moved his foot, and a heart-shaped kernel shot into the air behind him. The droid went motionless, then drained into the nugget. "Singularity mines." Lando pulled his breath mask down. "Nasty. Analysis predicts obstacle impassable," 11A reported. "All techniques for bypassing or clearing minefields will fail." Lando shook his head in disappointment. "Remind me to speak with the brain department about your ingenuity routines." He took out his comlink and opened a channel to the bridge. "Calrissian here. Request 2-second suspension of artificial gravity and inertial compensation." "Copy." Lando grabbed a bulkhead and had the droids magno-clamp themselves to the floor. A moment later, his stomach fluttered, and the singularity mines floated into the air. They drifted toward the stern and filled the corridor with eerie grating sounds as they brushed the walls and ripped 2-meter holes in the durasteel. When gravity was restored, the remaining husks dropped to the floor and destroyed a 5-meter section of service corridor. Lando released the bulkhead and sprinted toward Escape Bay 14. He had intended to lead the charge himself, but the droids were already there, pouring blaster fire through the hatchway. "Careful," Lando ordered. "Watch the baby. And 3PO. He peered around the corner. The last Yuuzhan Vong were squeezing into the crowded escape pod, flinging thud bugs at the bay hatch. Vicky Shesh was nowhere to be seen, and the muffled wailing of a terrified infant could just be heard from inside the pod. "Go," Lando screamed. "Don't let it launch." YVH-11A was already charging. The bug swarm trailed off. Then C-3PO's golden form tumbled out. "Don't shoot!" C-3PO screamed. He picked himself up and raised his hands. "I'm one of you!" The war droids continued to pour fire past C-3PO as they rushed across the launch bay. The pod hatch started to close. YVH-11A sprang forward, reached for the gap, arrived a millisecond too late to prevent it from sealing. C-3PO palmed the automatic launch button. "C-3PO!" Lando rushed for the control panel and hit the cancel pad. There was a soft clunk, then the rockets pounded the blast shielding with efflux. "What a relief!" C-3PO started across the bay. "I thought they would take me along." Lando followed close behind. C-3PO
Who was that crying in the escape pod?
Oh, that was me, General Calrissian, C-3PO answered in an infant's voice.
He stopped next to an emergency breath mask locker and withdrew a med-pack pouch containing a soundly sleeping infant.
Then won't be crying for several more hours. I am quite certain.